Hey, how you doing, Bradley?
Yeah, I'm doing well. Thank you
Awesome.
for having me.
Absolutely. We're here today to discuss what you eat and how that's helped you. And can you tell us a little bit about yourself, Bradley?
Yeah, so my story basically is I've had eczema my whole life. And so at the moment, just in terms of my work, like at the moment I'm a full-time musician. I'm studying. I've actually finished degrees in science, but that was majoring in mechanical engineering. And I have then studied music. So, because my full-time work is in music. And now I've gone back to university to do graduate studies in science, but now focusing on biochemistry because I really want to be working in the field of disseminating more of this health and information on the carnivore diet and how helpful it is to the community. So I really want to have some credibility in terms of knowledge. So I really want to I want to match my story with the knowledge behind it. That's why I'm studying at university right now, biochemistry. So in terms of work, yeah, I'm doing music, but I plan to do biochemistry for work in the future to complement that. In terms of marriage, no, I'm single at the moment and I'm just, studying and trying to, just trying to branch out as much as I can in this carnival world and spread the great information of how healing it is to as much people as I can. So in terms of my story, yeah, I've had eczema my whole life. So I don't know if I was, my mum said I had definitely had eczema by 3 months. So 3 months old. So anywhere between birth to 3 months, my eczema quickly became debilitating. So I'm not exactly sure why that is the case, but it may be factors like the immunization shots I took as a kid, and I could have like an allergy to the adjuvants, the metals inside it, because today I'm very allergic still to silver and bronze. And I had eczema my whole life, right up until to a year. Almost 2 years now have I been healed completely. So yeah, I've suffered from eczema my whole life and it's always been debilitating. It's always been oscillating between extremely bad to relatively okay. So there's some photos that exist on the internet of where I look great. So people have been saying, well, you look great here. Why is it that you're saying that you had eczema your whole life? Well, of course, when you're uploading photos on social media, I'm not going to be focusing on how bad I look. I usually try to, I mean, most people do this. I mean, they take photos of themselves when they look really good. So I oscillated obviously between really good and debilitating. So I was managing my eczema my whole life with steroid creams and antibiotics and moisturizers. So when it was good, because I was on these antibiotics and steroid creams to control the inflammation, I took photos, and that's why I look good on camera before. But
That's
anyway,
totally understandable because, even somebody that's overweight, they're not going to want to take pictures, too many pictures of themselves while they're overweight. So, and eczema is, it's an all over condition, right? It's not just, not just your face and
it
on,
was
right?
everywhere. I have memories of being in primary school and I'm playing with my friends and my friends were, kind and compassionate enough that they didn't treat me any different. But when people who didn't know me would come up to us, they'd stop and look at me and say, "What's wrong with your face?" or "What's wrong with your skin?" I'd be really like, I wouldn't want to wear shorts because and it was summer and it was really hot and here in Australia. And I just know that if I wore shorts, people would be able to see all the wounds, which are the size of avocado seeds, just covering all my legs, really bright red. So yeah, and I just was trying to hide that. And people would say, "Yeah, why are you wearing pants?" And the thing is, I'd go to school and the pants would just stick to your skin. So I'd come home and I'd have to rip off my pants. And by doing that, it would also rip my skin because it'd be weeping and bleeding and it'd be stuck to my skin and it'd just be horrible. So I'd be wearing these wet bandages over my legs to contain all the bleeding and I'd have to take off these gauze at the end of the day. And so life was like really difficult in growing up like that. But that's all I knew as a child. So I didn't know anything better. So I got used to it. And I just assumed that this would be my life indefinitely. And the doctor said, there's no cure. So I just took that as gospel. But having said that, when I was 13, I started to realize that every time I ate things like McDonald's, I'd notice my skin starting to flare up. So I asked my doctor, like, is there any correlation between diet and eczema? And so the dermatologist I was seeing at the time said, no, I don't think so. I think that's just in your mind. And I said, okay, what about the chlorine pools? Every time I jump in the water, I feel like I'm inflamed by the chlorine. He says, well, it has a tendency to dry out your skin, but I don't think that's not correlated. So straight away from 13 onwards, I was starting to feel like I was being gaslighted by doctors, and I started to question the official narrative. And at that age, I already started to avoid fast food, avoid chips and like seed oils, although I didn't really think it was seed oils that were responsible. I just avoided really fatty, oily food because I noticed it really inflamed me. So fast forward, 2023, the steroid creams stopped working for me. So I've been using them my whole life. I was doing a bunch of therapies in Western medicine, like UV therapy, everything under the sun that the doctors gave me. And so basically the steroid creams, they stopped working at multiple times. So I always had to increase the dose higher and higher until I reached a dose which was really high, to the point where it stopped working. And then the doctors were saying, look, it's no longer working for you. So I recommend you go on Dupixent, which is that biologic which suppresses the protein called interleukin. So it's not an immunosuppressant, but it acts in a similar way, which it targets a single protein called interleukin and basically suppresses the eczema from being inflamed and manifesting on your skin. This was relatively new in Australia. I was only about 5 years old, but it's been older in the UK. So I was already highly phased and disillusioned by Western medicine at that point, and I really didn't want to take continuous injections every month, twice a month, for the rest of my life. I just thought that wasn't addressing the root cause. It was just masking the problem. And at that point, I was really looking for a solution that was permanent, like something that addresses the root cause. And I heard a lot about, I was experimenting with a lot of different natural remedies, everything from cold water therapy to saunas. And at one point I was testing, I was trying to eliminate Wi-Fi radiation by turning off the Wi-Fi at night. And I went so far as to research Dr. McCullough, and he was advocating Faraday cages, because I noticed my skin got really bad in March 2020, which was the beginning of the pandemic. So in my mind, I was thinking this could be related to the pandemic. Maybe this is inflammation from COVID itself. Or maybe it's also to do with, I was noticing all these 5G towers come up. So, and I researched the 5G towers, and it says that increased radiation in the form of Wi-Fi, you can have EMF sensitivity. It doesn't affect everyone, but it affects some people where they have migraines and they get dry skin and they're hypersensitive to EMF. So I said, I thought to myself, you know, a lot of people say, you know, that's not the Wi-Fi, what are you, crazy? But for me, I thought maybe I was in that small minority of the population where I was really sensitive to EMF, because that was the only difference, is COVID and the EMF. And like at that point, we didn't have huge lockdowns. Like people were saying, maybe it's the lockdowns that affected you because you were inside all the time and you didn't get enough vitamin D and there was dust. No, it was actually before that it started to happen. So I tested the idea of a Faraday cage in physics 101. I just insulated my bed with all of this aluminium. Oh, sorry. At the time it was silver sheeting. I didn't realize I had a silver allergy at that point. So I learned the hard way. It worked, of course, because the EMF frequencies didn't penetrate and I wasn't getting any signal on my phone. So I'd go inside that Faraday cage and I had the most tranquil, amazing sleeps, and my dreams vivid, and Even my dad testified that when he slept in that cage, yeah, he said, yeah, it felt like I'm sleeping in the country. Like my dreams are so vivid.
Wow.
So it was great. But the thing is, I was highly allergic to silver, which I learned the hard way, and my skin just broke out really badly. So yeah, I had to change. I redid the Faraday cage. I didn't want to like just stop it there. So I tried it again, but this time with aluminium. So aluminium worked really well, but I wasn't noticing any improvements with my skin. So I ended up stopping it. So, you know, I could still try it today, but I just felt like it wasn't making it better. It wasn't making it worse. So I just didn't know what to do. So I just stopped doing that. And I started trying other things, you know, cold water therapy, sauna. So then I went to all of this really holistic gym where everyone there were like, I don't know, you describe them as awake or woke, if you will. And then they all subscribed to healthy diets, and they all did saunas and cold water therapy, and they all testified to the immense benefits of ice baths and how it reset your vagus nerve, and just the amazing transformations that you'd have losing weight by going into ice baths. So straight away, one of them there, who was the owner of the gym actually, said to me, you know, I had eczema just as bad as you. I mean, you wouldn't believe it, because you look at me now, I have no eczema at all. You know, you should just research the carnivore diet. That's what I'm on now. And he says, just eat. Like, he actually advocated to go further than the carnivore diet, which I did. I did the lion diet. Mm-hmm. So this was, I started it in 2022. I know the date is June 22nd, 2022. I started. So he said to me, just start it today. Don't like do the research as you go, but just eat meat. You know, don't worry about, you know, because I was saying, what about like constipation? What about, you know, heart disease? If I'm just going to be eating meat nonstop, is that a concern?
All right.
I just said, you know what? There's a lot of propaganda online, and, you know, the same, you know, because I was already aware that, you know, Wi-Fi could potentially be a problem. Like I've read the studies of how it increases risk of cancer with mobile phones, and I was already questioning a lot of the narrative, and even during COVID, I was questioning the whole, you know, the vaccines and all that.
Right.
So I was open in my mind to the idea that the dietary recommendations were wrong. I was open to that idea. So he said, you know, a lot of this is propaganda that we're led to believe. Meat is intensely beneficial. It's the most bioavailable, nutrient-dense food on the planet. And humans have been surviving eating this diet for more than like at least 2 million years of human evolution. So if it caused cancer, like we wouldn't be alive today to talk about its benefits. I mean, you just need to look at the Inuit tribes who thrive on an all meat carnivore diet, and you can see how healthy they are. I mean, you look at nowadays, actually they have processed foods coming in, so they can't benefit as much. You actually see that the modern diseases of society, like osteoporosis and autoimmune diseases, are rising in their population now that processed foods are returning to them, are coming into them, and they're starting to consume it. But in the 1950s, if you look at studies done on them when they were still eating pure carnivore diet, ancestral diets, you see that 33% of America had osteoporosis and all of these autoimmune conditions and cancer, whereas only 1% of the Inuit tribe suffered from those same conditions. Mm-hmm. So they were just thriving. And then, of course, you have studies like in Hong Kong, they have the highest meat consumption, and they also have the longest lifespan. So while I started this diet, I was reading The Carnivore Code by Paul Saladino. And okay. I was just trying to assimilate as much information as possible. So once I finished that book, all my qualms of whether this is going to kill me or not was just eradicated. And I also, you know, I watched Dr. Sean Baker and Dr. Ken Berry and Dr. Paul Mason does in Australia these amazing lectures on LDL and how, I mean, even Dr. Anthony Chaffee, he talks about just recently, he was talking about, you know, people who have heart attacks have high levels of LDL or low levels of LDL. It's 50-50. So it's not like you have to have high LDL levels to have a heart attack. It's really 50-50. And how can you then jump and conclude that it's the LDL that's responsible? And then, of course, I read books like Dr. Malcolm Kendrick, The Clot Thickens, amazing books. And basically, it just says, you know, LDL isn't the problem. LDLs are like the fire trucks the fire trucks at the house that's on fire, and everyone blames the fire truck because they're always there. The fire truck is the one, it's not responsible. It just happens to be there when the fire is there.
Right.
So the whole problem with LDL, as I soon learned, was, you know, LDL naturally is released by our liver. I mean, when we eat, it's chylomicron, which then forms LDL and then forms VLDL and then HDL, the good version, which eventually returns to the liver and is reabsorbed when it's in a healthy state, if there's nothing wrong with you. So it's nothing wrong with the LDL is vilified, but it's not LDL's fault. It's sugar's fault, as Dr. Paul Mason talks about. Once sugar combines with LDL, it becomes glycated, and it's damaged, and then it can't be reabsorbed by the liver, which then it then gets absorbed because it can't be reabsorbed by the liver. So it's just floating around your veins, or your arteries, sorry. And so at that point, it gets consumed by the macrophages on the side of your veins, which then forms atheromas, which is then responsible for the blood clotting and the thinning of the artery walls, which then result in atherosclerosis. So all of this research I was doing, you know, obviously relieved me in the sense that I knew everything that I was being told about how deadly meat is and how it causes cancer, and the World Health Organization, IARC, International Agency for Cancer Research, is saying how if you eat meat every day, then your risk of cancer is increasing by 17%. And if it's processed meat, it's 18%. So yeah, all of this was just being eradicated and proved to me that it was just propaganda. I mean, even just to say further, even in The Carnival Code is a section of that book where Paul Saladino includes that there's independent researchers questioning the trustworthiness of the IARC institution and questioning the trustworthiness of the World Health Organization, saying, please continue to eat meat. This is not based on solid research. It's based on epidemiological studies, one of which is there's this Adventist group, a vegetarian Adventist group at Loma Linda University. And basically they are inherently biased because they're vegetarian. Mm-hmm. And not just that, the authors even note that the highest rates of cancer were conflated with those who were insulin resistant and obese. So clearly he's saying the problem here, most likely, is the fact that you're insulin resistant and obese, not the fact that it's meat. And of course, if you're eating meat all the time, then epidemiological studies are troublesome, because how can you differentiate between the people who are living healthy lifestyles, who are lean, thin, working out and eating meat, versus those who are not caring about their lives and just smoking, drinking and eating meat because they think it's bad for you anyway. Like, you know, they're doing all three. They don't care. So he says, you know, most epidemiological studies are very hard to trust, so just throw them out. And the horrible thing is the IARC reports are basing majority of their studies are epidemiological. So yeah, there's no reason to be afraid that meat's going to cause cancer. And, you know, even now, Sean Baker is doing amazing research with there's the Harvard study, I think that he, I don't know if he found it. I think he founded it. So the Harvard study, which it's observational, so it's hard to trust, but there's just so much. I mean, 100% of people who had diabetes, who did a carnivore diet, came off injectable medications. And I mean, it has amazing just results for autoimmune diseases, diabetes, and just comorbidities. So many cases of people who have disease were resolved with a carnivore diet. And you're seeing it through anecdotes around the world, myself included. Absolutely. So anyway, 100 days into my journey.
What was your first meal? Once you said, okay, this isn't a crackpot thing, I'm going to try it. What was your first meal?
Oh, this is buying. Well, actually at the start, I I had a lot of chicken feet. I'm not sure why, because I was trying to get more fat intake into my body, because I knew that I needed to have a 70% fat macro. So I was trying to eat leaner cuts. I'm sorry. I was trying to have fattier cuts of beef, because I made that mistake at the start. I was eating lean cuts of beef, and people who were carnivores reaching out to me said, you know, this is too lean. There is a thing called rabbit starvation. You need to have more fattier cuts. So at the start I was having, what do you call it? There's a really lean cut here in Australia. I think it's called, forget what it's called, but it's just a really lean cut, which doesn't have much fat on it at all. And the thing is, it's cheap. So that's why I bought that, because it filled me up. But quickly into it, I eliminated the chicken feet, and I eliminated chicken and fish, because Paul Saladino said, you know, fish has a lot of mercury, and it has a lot of heavy metals in it as well. Chicken is fed soy and grains. It's monogastric, so you have to cut that out. Same with pork. Mm-hmm. I believe they're monogastric, so they're also fed soy and grains, so avoid that. And I was already allergic to eggs. Every time I tried eggs, I was being inflamed. So, and in fact, only recently I tried eggs again, and I'm still kind of recovering. I mean, I'm healed, but you can see there's some red dot there. That's right. From the egg.
Oh, wow.
So yeah. So I tried that a few weeks ago. So it takes a while to heal,
mm-hmm.
but, yeah. So I avoid eggs, but basically what I started off with, the things that worked well for me were the fatty cuts of meat, like T-bones, ribeye steaks, ribeye steaks, T-bones, Scotch fillet, they're really expensive cuts. So yeah, and I was getting grass fed too, cause I didn't want to blur the results by eating grains and then being uncertain whether the grains are triggering it or not. I really wanted to go extreme and cut out any inflammatories whatsoever. So I really wanted to eradicate the grains in case it inflamed me. So I was doing grass fed, and I still do grass fed to this day. So yeah, it was much more expensive, but yeah, I was going for the high end T-bones ribeyes. So yeah, 100 days into my journey. And at that point, I noticed it was improving within 2 weeks. 2 weeks, I was ready. I could sleep. I could sleep longer than an hour, because you must realize in this 3 years, from 2020 to 2023, 2022 around October was when I started to heal. So it's roughly a 3 year period between 2020, 2021, 2022, roughly 3 years. I went through this period of just debilitating, excruciating pain and this hell on earth of eczema everywhere, where I couldn't work anymore. It got so bad that, you know, I was teaching and my students would be looking at my fingers, and I knew customers would come in and I would be teaching them piano and they wouldn't come back because my hand was horrific. So I just stopped teaching. I quit my job and I just couldn't do much at all. And I remember even some of the parents who were loyal to me, because they knew me before it broke out so horribly, because I had it my whole life, but it was really debilitating from 2020 to 2022, when the steroids stopped working and they could no longer mask the pain anymore, the mask, the expression of the eczema. So parents were telling me, why don't you wear gloves? And so, I just said to them, look, I know it looks horrible, but I'm comfortable with the way I look. It's horrible and it's unsightly, but I'm not going to run away from how I look. And when I wear gloves, I can't play the piano very well. And not only that, it just exacerbates my eczema, because my skin sticks to the gloves and then I have to rip off the gloves and then it just causes more bleeding. So I'm not going to wear gloves, even though I know it's unsightly. So, you know, if you don't like the way it looks, you know, I'm not going to be offended if you don't hire me. So, but basically I quit most of my work because I couldn't do much at all. So I was just lying in bed, and most of the time was really awful. So most of the time I couldn't sleep because it's just so itchy. I'd be lying in bed, and if I was lucky enough to sleep for an hour, I'd be dreaming, and in my dreams I'd have like I'd be dreaming that I was crawling over glass. Or I'd be dreaming that there were electrical wires hanging from the ceiling and I was electrocuting myself by walking through them. Or I'd be dreaming that there was crabs everywhere and they were pinching me. So, so even the pain was manifesting in my dreams. So, yeah, it was horrible. So within 2 weeks of this diet, I was noticing I could sleep again. I could sleep much better than I used to. So it just was getting exponentially better with time. And by 100 days, I no longer had eczema on my body.
Yeah, I love it. That's awesome.
Yeah. It was amazing. Yeah. And I actually returned to the doctors afterward and I said, look, I healed myself. And the doctor said, oh yeah, that's amazing. How'd you do that? And I just said, this book. So I held Carnival Code by Paul Saladino. And he said, yeah, Bradley, you really need to, you need to be highly questioning of materials such as that, because it's not really, you know, he says he's a doctor, but it's not really based on consensus and universal science. So I'm like, but he healed me.
Yeah. What about the consensus of one?
Yeah. Yeah. He said, you know, yeah, but it may heal you, but you know, you still got, you know, your skin's still a bit dry there. So you could still benefit from Dupixent. So I was just like, oh, it's ridiculous. This is the best I've been in my entire life. I've never looked healthier than this. Okay. So I just haven't gone back to doctors since, apart from maybe a few blood tests, which I've done. And of course the blood tests show that my LDL levels are very high, and the doctor was concerned, saying, you know, your LDL is higher than normal. What are you eating or what are you doing? So, but of course I'm not concerned about that, because I've looked at Dr. Paul Mason's lectures and he says, as long as your ratio of triglycerides to HDL, I believe, is smaller than one, then you should be fine. And my ratio was 0.33. So yeah, it's all fine.
That's awesome. Yeah. I'm with you there with the LDL. I mean, I started for a different reason, an autoimmune condition called vitiligo, which also that's reversing, which they say there's no cure for that. So that's incredible, but it healed like 20 other things. In the meantime, it doesn't matter to me. I don't need validation at all with LDL, whether it's good or bad or not. Intuitively, I know because of eating this way, all of these things are fixed and I feel awesome. Like I'm 47, but I literally feel like I'm 20.
Yeah.
It's incredible. So that's all the validation that I need. That's all the consensus that I need, is the consensus of one, the one that's been through it. And if I have a heart attack down the road for whatever reason, so be it. I lived a great life until that point. So,
yeah, I'm the same. You know, if I was going to return to a standard diet, the amount of pain that I'd be suffering through, I mean, I don't believe I'll have a heart attack. I really don't believe that. You know, a lot of people on Instagram are telling me, you know, make sure, some of the comments from vegans or whoever who are skeptical, they say, make sure you have a doctor close by, because yeah, your skin looks good, but your insides probably are rotting and you're probably just going to have a heart attack one day. So, you know, if I was going to return to a standard diet, like the pain and suffering that I'd go through is just horrible. So I'd rather the life I'm living now, with the uncertainty that I'm going to have a heart attack in 10 years, which I really highly doubt that's going to happen.
Right.
But I mean, the pleasure I have of being able to live liberated in my health and able to do whatever I want, is a much better pathway than the alternative, where I'm being safe and adopting a standard diet where I'm just in debilitating pain and literally dying. I was literally dying at that point. I was hospitalized usually every 6 months, because it was a continuous cycle for me. Like there's these phases of being healthy and then relatively healthy, where it's not really healthy. It's just controlled by steroids and antibiotics. And then it would get worse again. And once it gets worse, I'd have to return back to the antibiotics and the steroids. And usually I'd be hospitalized. And yeah, it's just a continuous cycle that gets worse and worse and worse. Every time I use antibiotics, 2 weeks later, it comes back even worse once I'm off the drugs. So, you know, during that 3-year period, I was trying to, I was trying to not, like, I was trying to not use the antibiotics as long as I could, like try to just not go to the hospital, and because I knew it was the same cycle. I didn't want to repeat the same thing. So I was trying to like hold it off. Let's see how long I can last just trying these natural therapies. And yeah, it got to a point. At one point, it got so bad that I was just, yeah, this is horrible. I need to go into the hospital. And then the doctor was like, yeah, lucky you came in, because if you hadn't, like, your blood is, you've got sepsis, and it's just, wow. you need to go on antibiotics and oral steroids immediately. And of course, when I did that, it cleared it all up, but it's the same thing. And so I said, this is no way out. This is just, it's going to be like this forever, and it's just going to get worse and worse. And yeah, I was literally dying in that pathway. So with the path I'm on now is, you could be potentially dying in the future, but I'm healthy the whole time in the meantime, and I can do whatever I want. I mean, yeah, you gotta consider, before I literally did a 6-month course in software engineering, like computer programming, because I just didn't want to see people. I was that bad. I wanted to just work from home and code behind my computer. But now I've reached a stage where I could do anything again. So it's opened pathways where I can return back to university and do biochemistry, and I don't feel inhibited by, you know, the stress of being constantly itchy every day and just in debilitating pain. So yeah, it's really the freedom of health and liberation.
That's amazing, Bradley. That's yeah, absolutely incredible. And I can't imagine what that must feel like after decades of that condition.
Yeah, it was a dream, honestly, as a kid. You know, like, I thought it was just a dream. You know, kids wish to, you know, they wish for riches, or they wish for this, or to be a Jedi, or whatever they want. But like my dream as a kid was, you know, I saw my friends diving into the pool, or, you know, taking their shirt off, and then they had pure skin that was unblemished,
mm-hmm,
you know, glowing in the sun. And I'd look at that and I'd said, wow, I wish I had that. And like my favorite like superhero as a kid was Wolverine, because he could, you know, I said to myself, if Wolverine had eczema, he could just scratch and it would heal in this seconds. So yeah.
He's still your favorite, right?
Yeah, he's still my favorite. I mean, you know, like I dream to have pure skin. And so if I was to tell myself, you know, one day you will, because I asked that to the doctors, you know, is there a chance that I could outgrow this? And she said, yeah, there is a chance. The doctors would tell me, yeah, there is a chance. But I mean, the fact, like, it was a possibility. So I always had hope, but getting older and older, and it was not going away, it was actually getting worse. The doctor said, look, I just don't think it's going to go away. The only way to manage this is with steroids indefinitely, or Dupixent for the rest of your life. And, but yeah, if I would have told myself as a kid that you'd be living like you are now, like, it's just a dream come true.
Wow. So prior to, you know, this, miraculous healing that you've had, did you struggle with any kind of depression or anything like that?
Oh, of course. Yeah. Yeah. So every single day, I mean, the standard statistic of people who suffer from eczema is 36% more likely to contemplate suicide ideation, and 44% more likely to kill themselves. So this is, yeah, it's just awful as it is. And I remember reading these, I used to listen to podcasts all the time because I couldn't sleep. So I just have the voices from the podcast on my phone going beside my bed, mm-hmm, because it'd be cathartic and hearing other people's stories. And yeah, there's this girl, her name's, I think, the Eczema Conquerors, the Eczema Warriors. I think it's Eczema Conquerors. And she basically was just journaling her stories and getting people in to talk to. And she was talking about how when she was living in Hong Kong, like, she was living on this 11th story building, and every night she'd be thinking about, you know, jumping out the window. It was just, wow, so sad. Yeah. And, I forget the exact statistic, but they were talking about there's this spectrum, like it's from 0 to 1, where they measure your quality of life. And people who, like, if you're 1, you're absolutely healthy and you're happy. Mm-hmm. And 0 is debilitating. So people who had cancer measured like 0.3. And the doctors were astounded because people who had debilitating eczema also measured 0.3. And the doctors were saying, yeah, why is the quality of their life so poor? Like they're not dying. It's just rashes on the skin. But yeah, if people have eczema, they will know completely why that is the case, because it's just so debilitating and you're in such pain every day and you just can't escape your own body and you're just, yeah, you can't sleep and it just taxes your mind. Like I remember doing exams where I was doing this like accounting exam and I was just like, just as a breadth subject to my science degree. And I was just shaking in the exam because I was that itchy. And I was, it's hard to think and concentrate when you're in that much pain, debilitating.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So,
wow.
Yeah. So, I was, in terms of depression and, you know, suicide ideation, I was never suicidal because I always had this hope that I said to myself, I'm going to find a way through this. I don't know how, but I'm going to find my way through it. And it was almost like a delusional hope. Like, I know I'm not going to be like this forever. I'm going to find a way. I don't know how, but I will. I'm not going to live like this forever. So that's why I journeyed through all this alternate therapies. I was just disillusioned by Western medicine. I was looking constantly for things. I was looking for hope everywhere I could. And that's what kept me buoyant in my mind and stopped me from sinking into depression. So, but of course it got very hard because, I mean, I was living at home with my parents and my parents were helping me. Like my mom even tells me how, you know, she suffered also because she couldn't sleep because she knew she could hear me upstairs, like moaning, and she could hear me like in pain. So she'd usually come upstairs and she'd try to bandage, like what she'd, you know, sometimes she'd just scratch my hair because she knew that relieved me. At least that would distract me from the pain in my body and that would help me fall asleep. So she would bandage my wounds. So she'd spend a lot of time just sitting up with me at night and helping me. And she'd go to work the next day and she'd be falling asleep at her job at the desk because she'd spend like all night with me trying to put me to sleep.
Wow.
So yeah, but I remember like thinking to myself and telling my parents, like, you know, I'm young now, but what happens when, you know, 30 years down the track, once you're like, or 40 years down the track, once you're both passed away and I'm living by myself, like, I don't know how I'm supposed to care for myself if it's getting worse every year and I'll just be living in debilitating pain. Like, what quality of life do I have? Mm-hmm. It'd just be awful. And I can't imagine a life like that. So, I mean, I remember thinking to myself, the quality of life is so awful. Is this life worth living? Like, that would go through my head. But at the same time, I'd never want to entertain those thoughts very long. And in fact, I was in a point where it was just awful and I was really upset and just resentful of my state. But it got to a point where there was like a turning point in my mindset because I had this debilitating car accident where I almost lost my life and my dad was driving. Wow. Yeah. So like it's a amazing like story in itself but like following that car accident, it changed my mindset and it made me realize because I almost lost my life in that car accident. Like just to go into it, like a car hit me at 80 kilometers per hour and my dad was driving and the car was spinning. So my dad was instantly unconscious. I looked over at him and his eyes were rolled up in his sockets and I just thought he was dead. And, you know, the phone was hovering in the air and it was surreal where time seemed to slow because the adrenaline was surging through my veins and it felt like the force of God. It was just like, there's so much pressure. I could feel the pressure in my skull and on my body. And I just felt like something was pushed, like it was just this huge force. And eventually, like, I was awake the whole time. I could hear my voice like from another dimension saying like, oh my God, screaming. And my dad was on the wheel. So it didn't just stop there. Like he was driving. So his foot was still on the accelerator and we started driving down the road really fast and off the road onto the grass. And we were driving up the grass, up a hill, and I was just missing trees and missing poles. And I was saying to my dad, I was saying, I need to do something, because my dad's like, he's unconscious. He's dead. I thought he was dead, but he was unconscious. Mm-hmm. And I need to do something, because if I don't stop this car, I'm going to die as well. So I had a flashback to when I was 8 years old. My dad told me, you know, if I have a heart attack when I'm driving, what are you going to do? I don't know. So, well, you need to pull the handbrake up and you need to put it in neutral. So when I was in the car, it just flashed back to that. And I saw that in my head, like clear as day. I was like, okay, that's what I need to do. So I put the handbrake up and I put it in neutral and the car slowed. And so it did hit a second car. Like there was we went across this whole hill. On the other side of the hill was this car park. And there was all these cars parked. So we crashed into a car that was parked there. And the car beside us actually had all these poles sticking out. So it was really lucky that we hit a pole, that we hit the car next to it. That was the standard car. There was no poles protruding. Otherwise it would have went right through the windshield. Mm. So it stopped the car, but it still hit, impacted, and all the airbags went off, but it was not fast enough to be lethal. So yeah. And the crazy thing is, out of all of that, I remember like sitting in my seat and then thinking to myself, okay, now the car stopped. The engine was still revving because my dad's foot was still on the accelerator, but it was in neutral. And, you know, it was just going crazy. And I was like, I'm sitting here. Now is the point where, like, I'm already in debilitating pain from my eczema. Now, in the next few seconds, I'll find out whether I'm a paraplegic or not. You know, in the next few seconds, I'll find out if I can walk or not for the rest of my life. So I opened the door and I said, this is the time. So I stepped up and I said, okay, I can walk. That means I'm okay. And you know, there's a bit of pain here, but it's probably fine. So it turned out I didn't have a single scratch on my body beyond the scratches I had from my eczema already. I was completely unharmed. Right. And like, you know, my friends and my family were saying that's miraculous. You know, the religious ones in my family were saying that's God protecting you, mm-hmm. the angels. And yeah, I went over to my dad on his side and I thought he was dead. So I opened the door and I was shaking him. And for about a minute, like he was just completely lifeless. And I was just doing it. I was thinking, yeah, he's dead. There's no way he survived, because there was blood coming from his forehead and the window shield was cracked from where he hit the window shield. He's just dead. So I was just shaking him and I was screaming like in a movie, like, wake up, wake up. And then a minute into that, you could hear the breath of life coming from him. And I said, oh my God, he's alive. So yeah, it was just crazy. And there's a whole pool of people just like around the car saying, turn off the engine. So I turned it off and I said, call the police, and crazy. And then there was a whole period of time where he forgot who I was. And I was just like, oh wow, maybe he knew who I was, but he forgot my name, or he forgot my age, and he forgot certain aspects. He didn't know where he was and he was disorientated and had memory loss. So for a while I was thinking, okay, maybe he survived. Maybe he'll have brain damage from this. So I was really concerned for a long time, but he was fine. All he had was a broken sternum from the seatbelt working.
Ouch.
So yeah. So his sternum completely broke in half, but obviously the seatbelt saved his life. So yeah, I was completely unscathed from the accident. So following that, I was, you know, I wasn't depressed, but I was resentful and I was very upset and I didn't know where I was headed and life was awful. But after that, I started to wake up in the morning grateful for life, even though I was in debilitating pain and in my state, like close to death. like, as I said, going to the hospital with sepsis, I was dying at one point. So I was still like in horrible pain and in just so infected, but I was still grateful. Like, I remember waking up after that accident and just every morning I'd be looking at the sun rising and I said, I can still see the sunrise. I'm still alive. And even though to just to look at the sun, because the windows are to my right, just to turn my head, I'm in horrible pain just to look, I'm grateful to be able to see the sun rising.
I love that.
Yeah. So following that, like, I remember talking to, I had a podcast just recently with this guy who is an amazing story also. And he basically said gratitude is amazing in terms of healing, because once you find gratitude, it just the psychological aspects of healing, like it's just like how stress correlates to overall, if you're living in a stressful state, you can have more disease, you can be more prone to disease. If you can find a place of gratitude, then, he was saying that's possibly why it accelerated your healing, because you were living and you were grateful, even though you were still in a horrible state. So yeah, that was the pivoting moment. Like, that was 2021. That was like right at the center of my 3 years of hell.
Mm-hmm.
And following that, a car accident, being grateful, it wasn't long after where I found, like, 2021, that was April. So a year later, I found the carnivore diet and I healed. So I was already in a state where I was willing to accept, if this is my life for the rest of my life, where I'm in horrible pain, then so be it. But I'm still grateful for this life. So yeah, that was my journey through, depression and hardship. I tried really, really hard to remain buoyant in my mind the whole time by reading like stories. So that was major, the huge pivoting moment. But on top of that, like, I was reading stories of other people to keep me motivated to like keep living and keep fighting. I was reading stories of people who climbed Mount Everest and got lost like into thin air. What's his name? Forget his name. But into thin air, amazing account of they get lost on Mount Everest, and through the sheer willpower to live, there's this guy who's just lying on the side of Mount Everest, dying of frostbite, can barely move. And he can see his family in his eyes, in his mind's eye. And he can see his son and he can see his wife, and they're telling him to get up, get up, get up. So he's just lying there on the snow and he just, it's okay, I'm going to get up. And he picks himself up. And he finds, like a zombie, he manages to walk all the way back to base camp, even though he can barely move. And so I was reading these stories to keep myself sane, and stories like Edward Shackleton, how he spent 2 years journeying the Arctic and finding his way back to civilization. So like, I use these stories to keep myself buoyant, because I just couldn't allow myself to sink into darkness. I had to fight my body, I had to fight my disease, my eczema, not just through body, but through mind. Yeah.
That's incredible that you were able to keep yourself afloat. You know, some other people probably would have went to much darker places, in your position. Yeah. So that's really good that you were able to maintain that level of mental, alertness, acuity, not going to that dark place. So yeah. What's the depression like now that you're animal based?
Oh, I don't have depression at all. I mean, yeah, it's just, I'm happy. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, even then, like, I wouldn't consider it depression. I wouldn't label it depression. I would just label it, intense sadness, which is obviously a result of the horrible state that I was in. I mean, I know there's people who suffer from clinical depression, and I'm not averse to using the term, but I think I don't like to, because in my mental state, I didn't want to label myself as mentally ill. I wanted to, if I'm sad, it's obviously because of the state I'm in. So I'm not going to like succumb. Yes, you're just depressed. I mean, I have been through stages where I have felt incredibly depressed, And I felt numb and I felt awful, but I never wanted to say, look, I'm depressed. I suffer from depression, because I felt like that was giving into the label. So, you know, it probably was depression, but I always fought that label. And if I was sad, it's induced from the state I'm in. I need to keep myself buoyant. I need to keep myself hungry for health by reading these novels. And so I always fought it and I always stayed buoyant, even though I felt like I was sinking every time into darkness. I'd always try to swim back to the surface as much as I could, because I said, my mind is everything.
That must be the fighter in you. You know, you're probably the only person that I know of that actually built a Faraday cage to,
My dad was mainly the one who built it, because he's great with his hands. He builds a lot of things out around his house, which I live in. And he built it, and it was just great. I obviously encouraged him, can you please build a Faraday cage? Because I think this will work for me.
Yeah, I love that, man. That's awesome. So your eczema is healed completely. Your depression is not there anymore.
Yes.
Is there any other side effects, if you will, of eating animal-based that you've noticed?
Well, of course, animal-based, if I'm, you know, people... Well, one thing I noticed is when I'm in rehearsals with my friends or studying, people say, do you want a break? And so I remember, like, I think to myself, oh, yeah, that's right. We've been going for like 2 to 3 hours now without a break. And, you know, you can just last a lot longer when you're on an all meat or all meat plus fruit diet, because you just don't have the peaks and the troughs that other people have. Like if you're eating a lot of sugar or you're eating a lot of processed foods, you get peak and then you feel fatigued afterwards. So on an animal-based diet, it's just consistent. Like you don't need coffee to wake you up. It's just consistent throughout the whole day, and you have a greater sense of mental acuity. And Jordan Peterson talks about this too. Like you just feel like he can think so much more clearer.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, and yeah. I also practice fasting as well. So I don't eat until around 2 p.m. So in the morning, just fasting, I have such, there's such mental acuity when I'm fasting. I just feel so clear in my mind. So the combination of animal-based plus fasting, it's such a great duo, because when you're eating heavy meals like meat, you don't feel as hungry. So you can stay fuller for longer. So it really complements fasting plus animal-based.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I love that. Yeah, I feel this exactly the same way. I mean, my mental acuity is... Ooh, it's off the charts. I actually had a car accident back in 2017 and suffered brain damage from that.
Oh, no.
Yeah, the doctor said that I lost approximately 10% of my brain function.
Wow.
And that effectively, you know, it may get a little better, but it's permanent.
That's crazy.
And, long story short, I went carnivore, and within 5 months, I feel like I'm at 150%. Brain capacity now.
Yeah.
But, you know, that it's gone far beyond that 100%. And I had noticeable motor function issues. I had motor tics, lots of balance issues. You know, I'd close my eyes, I would fall over. I'd have to have a light on at night. I couldn't close my eyes in bed, or I would have vertigo symptoms. So
wow,
live with that stuff for almost 6 years, and then went carnivore, and it's gone. I can't even.
Amazing. What's it like when you lose 10% of your brain? Did it affect anything else, like your sentience? Could you feel like limiting, did it limit your sentience in any way? Like memories or.
Yeah,
how you perceive definitely. The world.
Yeah, there was long-term and short-term memory loss.
Wow.
And also cognition. So I couldn't concentrate on, you know, I was a controls engineer at the time, and I couldn't concentrate and use my brain for more than 30 minutes to an hour. And that was it. Wow. I was done for the day. So the doctor put me on limited work for weeks and weeks. I couldn't go to work at all. And then I gradually introduced, you know, I was at work for 2 hours, then I was at work for 4 hours, and then six, and then finally eight. But still, I still would get, even if I went to work for 8 hours and then went home and did some stuff for a little while, my brain would eventually get overloaded. And I would start, the motor tics would start showing up at that point once I would get overloaded, and nothing would fix it but rest. But that completely went away after I ate carnivore for about 5 months, which is insane.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what health advice, or I shouldn't say health advice, but what tips would you have for somebody that is considering a diet change, or they're looking for answers, that has eczema? What would you suggest for them?
Yeah, I think I think every single person is different. So it's very easy to say, just adopt a carnivore diet. And I don't like being ideological in any sense, whether carnivore or vegan. Mm-hmm. I think you need to tailor the diet to suit you. So for example, if you're going to go full carnivore, then you probably look at the list of foods you can eat, and then you probably start following those lists of foods, and then it might not work for you. And then you might say, oh, carnivore doesn't work. But the problem is, a lot of people with eczema have allergies to egg, or they might have allergies to dairy. So you can't really adopt carnivore and say that meat is not healing for you if you're still being inflamed by foods in carnivore. So, I mean, if you're debilitatingly ill, I'd really recommend an intense elimination diet. Like, for what I did was, the reason why I went full meat based is like, I just didn't eat anything but meat for a few months. Mm-hmm. And that way I just eradicated everything else. And so when I started, so that way I could scientifically observe when I reintroduce foods, what's actually causing the inflammation. If I didn't do that, I wouldn't be able to tell the difference between what is causing my eczema, whether that's the food or whether that's the eczema itself. So after a few months on the diet, like the good thing about my condition is that after I eat something, it comes up within a few hours to a day. So other people, like Michaela Peterson said, she said when she tried sulfur, like she felt awful the next day, but sometimes it can take a week to a month to manifest. Like, it's quite slow. So the blessing about my condition is that it's instantaneous. I know exactly what inflames me a few hours to a day after eating it. So I could test in that way. So if I didn't eliminate foods and restrict my diet just down to meat, I wouldn't be able to be as scientific as I was and categorize what foods inflame and what don't. So for 3 months, the only reason I started introducing fruit back in is because I was getting intense cramps 3 months in. And that's what Paul Saladino explained in his book, that he got cramps. And the way to fight that was by introducing raw honey again and, you know, sugar in the form of fruit. So that's why my diet today is more animal based than carnivore, because I have meat plus fruit, and I don't have dairy or eggs and butter and cheese. It's just meat plus fruit. And a lot of actual people online say that's a real ideal way of living, like a fruit plus meat diet. Paul Saladino says it's like the optimal, well, he obviously may be biased, but he says it's the optimal way of living. And So 3 months in, I eliminated everything but meat, and then I could start reintroducing foods. So if you're adopting a carnivore diet, if you're looking for a diet to heal you, I'd say don't just adopt the whole diet. You got to cater it to suit you. You need to identify what food you can and cannot. And you have to use everything as a guide. For example, Paul Saladino's book, the carnivore code, he has this graph where he talks about plant toxins, plant toxicity chart. So for example, legumes, nuts tend to be the most inflammatory as they have the most anti-nutrients, and fruit tends to be the least inflammatory, as evolutionary wise, it makes sense. The plant wants you to disseminate its seeds to germinate the plant. So that's why it makes sense that it's not going to inflame you. So, but you have to tailor your diet is what I'm saying. And I think that's an important aspect. Don't just like even in information, like you have to don't just take any diet as gospel. Question everything, analyze everything, and use it to your advantage. And use it to help you, as well as information. Take everything informational wise with a grain of salt. Like the recommended dietary intake from the World Health Organization, or take every single thing you read and scrutinize it with your own intellect. Don't ever just accept things as gospel, just because even as things as amazing as the World Health Organization or IARC, or you know, even though they seem like elaborate, amazing organizations, question it. Question everything. You know, whether it's COVID, whether it's the news. It's important to remain skeptical. I mean, that's the nature of science, is to be scientific and question. You can't just remove your ability to question and just blindly follow. You have to question everything to be scientific. And that's how I healed. I questioned everything. And that's why I was unafraid to try new things. And that's another thing about diet. It's like a lot of people are not willing to try a carnivore diet until the doctors say, we can't do anything more for you. Because, you know, I've tried Dupixent now because these don't work. So a lot of people are not willing to try. I mean, it's scary, right? Because you could suffer from atherosclerosis, you could get cancer. I mean, I don't want to try these weird diets if it might kill me, and if I'm already thriving on the diet that I am now. But are you thriving? You know, a lot of people start saying that their joints start closing up when they're 30, they start feeling older, they can't go out as long, and they feel handicapped in some way. They don't feel as agile.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's a result of your diet. So what I'm saying is, a lot of people try these carnivore diets as a last resort, when really a carnivore diet is very close to the ancestral way of eating. I'd say an ancestral way of eating is meat plus fruit. So everything, I mean, I think even in the Bible it says, or even ancestrally, there's evidence that proves that vegetables were only eaten as a last resort, as a survival food, in case there was no meat available, or fruit available. So yeah, long story short, I mean, just like really scrutinize all the information you can, and don't resort to the diet as a last resort. You know, start trying it even if you're healthy. See how you feel. You might even feel even more healthy. Like I was talking to this guy yesterday, and he said, I cut out oats and I cut out gluten because Dr. Fasano says actually that gluten affects everyone transiently. It actually affects, it permeates, it penetrates the gut and causes leaky gut with everyone, not just those with like celiac disease. So everyone can benefit from an ancestral diet. You're never too young to start. If it didn't exist 100 years ago, perhaps we shouldn't be eating it. You know, we looked a lot healthier 100 years ago when there wasn't in the seed oils and all of these processed sugars permeating our diet.
That's true. Huh. Awesome. Yeah, I love that, man. That's great advice. You know, you got me ready to start the carnivore diet. Yeah, that's awesome. So where can folks find you on the internet, Bradley?
Yeah, so I'm mostly engaging on YouTube plus Instagram.
Okay.
So you can find, or you can even find me on TikTok. I've just started a new TikTok, but mostly most of my followers are on Instagram. That's okay. Where I've disseminated most of my content, and that's at Bradley Marshall Official.
Ah, nice. Okay, cool. Yeah, I'll make sure that I drop those links in the description below for everybody so they can hook up with Bradley and consume his content and be enlightened in their dietary travels for sure.
Yeah, awesome.
I appreciate you spending the time to share with us your story, Bradley. No doubt you're going to inspire many, many, many people to explore this way of eating and heal themselves in the process. And in turn, not only heal themselves, but, you know, you had alluded to your mother and your parents being affected by this as well. So, you know, you're going to help to put families in a better position because of your story. Yeah. So I thank you for that.
Yeah. Even like a Dupixent in America costs $50,000 a year, I believe.
Wow.
Yeah. So I know it's expensive on a meat-based diet, but for me in Australia, it's expensive. Don't get me wrong. It's around $20,000 a year, Australian dollars, that is. Mm-hmm. So it's still a reduction in the amount you're spending for medicines in America and pharmaceuticals.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'd rather heal from the root cause rather than apply something topically that just masks the symptoms but doesn't address the root issue.
Absolutely. You're young, but extremely wise, Bradley. I appreciate you.
I appreciate being here. Thank you so much for your time.
Yeah. Take care, Bradley.
Take care.